And in other cases, again, we find double meaning to disguise the truth. So such is the case of Krishna's message to the gopis delivered by Uddhava. So the superficial meaning is, in separation from me, you should be like yogis, and I am everywhere anyway, so you can just meditate and you will be in contact with me because I'm everywhere. So that's the superficial meaning of his words. And it's very pleasing to impersonalists and yogis because it's advising the gopis to surpass lamentation by becoming yogis or gyanis and seeing everything as one. And this is how they will also interpret the whole of the Bhagavatam in terms of this. See, even Krishna is giving advice to the highest devotees, the gopis, to become impersonalists. So this is one level, and we'll find the same thing taking place when Krishna talks to the gopis and tries to console them in Kurukshetra. A similar type of message is there, that he's pervading everything, Lord is pervading everything, so in this way you shouldn't feel separated from me. On the other hand, this does not seem very appropriate. How could the gopis be pacified by such words? And previously they were not pacified. At the same time, the conclusion of the Bhagavatam is that devotees are superior to gyanis and yogis. So why would he advise, why would Krishna advise them to take up a lesser position and give up their devotion and become yogis or gyanis? So there's a lot of things which are contradictory there. So therefore, based on that, we say that's not the actual meaning. And then you have to look for another meaning in the words. So in this way, all of our acharyas, they give a different meaning to those words, those messages that Krishna gave to the gopis. And then we end up with an opposite meaning ultimately. So why that? Because this is to hide the real meaning from unqualified people and to let the impersonalists and the gyanis and others take another meaning from Bhagavatam. They should not appreciate the rasa of the Bhagavatam. So therefore, real meaning is hidden. Though Bhagavatam is very direct in many ways, certain aspects are also disguised or hidden. And this is a common technique in Vedic literature. And in the 11th canto, Krishna says, I am fond of this method. This is what the sages do when they speak. They do not speak directly. They speak indirectly. And I prefer this method also. And he tells this to Uddhava. So therefore, not only in the Bhagavatam do we find this technique used, we'll find it in the Upanishads also. And because of that, sometimes people misinterpret the Upanishads or they cannot understand them. The words look too confusing or contradictory. As we see in Isopanishad, the Lord walks but he doesn't walk, he's near but he is far, etc. So it's quite a common technique used in the scriptures. So disguising the meaning and hiding it in various ways, sometimes by contradiction and sometimes by giving two opposite meanings or two different meanings. And in fact, we'll find that the first verse of Bhagavatam, Jamadasyataha, etc., Vishwanath and Jiva Goswami, they give an elaborate explanation of this verse, giving it many different levels of meaning. The general meaning that usually you see in the translation, plus a meaning that indicates the pastimes of Radha and Krishna, or the pastimes of Krishna and Vrindavan, or the development of bhakti to prema. Completely different meanings that are there. And they justify that because they say that the introduction to the work should summarize everything. So in this way, the introductory verse indicates spiritual life in general, indicates Krishna, indicates Radha and Krishna, indicates bhakti and prema. So that is true. This is what the Bhagavatam indicates. So therefore, they give these explanations for the first verse of the Bhagavatam by analyzing the words differently and changing the sandhis, etc., meanings of the words sometimes. So therefore, though we study the words of the Bhagavatam, we should also look for deeper meanings in many cases. As we see here, double meaning, opposite meaning is here. So in many cases, the words of the Bhagavatam can have several layers of meaning. And we have to choose those which are harmonious with the whole of the Bhagavatam. Some of the meanings may be contradictory. So that is the case where Krishna delivers messages to the gopis. There's contradiction in what he says because it contradicts the Bhagavatam and its very principle. So therefore, we look for other meanings there. At the same time, we cannot speculate meanings on our own and just produce new meanings. This is something which is discouraged. And what we call lakshana, or taking the indirect meaning. So yes, sometimes we have to take the indirect meaning, but other times we don't have to. So unnecessarily, when there's no contradiction, we do not take indirect meanings. We try to see the explicit statements and explicit conclusions. Where there is contradiction, then we have to take another meaning to things. So therefore we also have to be careful that we don't speculate about meanings also, just before our own desire or whim. Thus, it is important that we follow the Sampradaya, that we follow the commentaries of the Acharyas. If they give interpretation, then fine, we accept that. Because they give that interpretation based upon so many factors, including context and contradiction, etc. So we don't go beyond that and try to speculate on other meanings and other conclusions. So, in general, we have to take the direct meaning, which is called abhidha. In other cases, we must take lakshana, where there is contradiction and whatnot. And generally follow the acharyas who have studied very deeply, and they know when the lakshana should be used, indirect interpretation should be used. So here we find how the various great acharyas give another meaning. In this case, it's not even our Sampradaya. Sridhar Swami who's doing this. He's giving this other meaning. So he understands the nature of the Bhagavatam, so therefore he's willing to give these words another meaning, which is, I say, conducive for the devotees, more acceptable for the devotees, so that the offense of Shishupala does not agitate them. So they get a positive meaning out of his words. Of course, this is also the quality of a devotee. He can take gold out of any place. Even if it's in the mud, he'll take it out and clean it up. Or we say that the swan takes the milk from the mixture of water and milk, the Paramahamsa. So a person, a qualified person, can find something very valuable, even if it's disguised in many different ways, and other people cannot see it. He can take out the real essence. So similarly, the great acharyas can take out the essence of everything and find the real meaning for everyone. So, in this case, when we see harsh words spoken, then the devotees or the acharyas can find a positive meaning also, so therefore they don't see the so much the offense as they see a praise for the Lord. And we also see that this is also the quality of the uttama devotees. They see everything in terms of prema for Krishna. So even the demons, they think, have prema for Krishna. And so even their words have prema for Krishna. So they'll see opposite meaning. He's not so bad after all. He's also a devotee. Like this. So this is the vision of the devotee in prema, that he sees everybody in relation to the Lord in prema. So therefore, even the demons, he will see them as having prema, and their words will also have prema. So therefore, not surprising that we'll get such meanings here where the blasphemous words become praises of the Lord. So he'll find good even in the bad. this is the therefore not so unusual that we find these words taken with an opposite meaning. Shishupala, of course, was definitely hostile to the Lord. This was his nature, and it was his nature for three lifetimes, continually hating the Lord, continually not accepting his position, thinking he's an ordinary human being who can be killed. For him, these words were nothing unusual. When Hranikasipu saw Narsimhadev, though he saw the Lord in that most astonishing form, he did not accept him as the Lord. So he thought, I can kill him. And when Ravana saw Rama, then he also thought, I can kill him. He's just a human being who's got this position of a king by punya in the material world. And then when Shishupala saw Krishna, again, not the Supreme Lord. He's an ordinary human being disguising himself as a king or whatever like this. Not surprising, therefore, that he would utter these words, because for three lifetimes he carried this hatred of the Lord. But then it is said that this hatred made him concentrate on Krishna. He hated him so much that he was always thinking of him. So the example is given of a certain insect that gets trapped by the wasp and gets stuck inside the little hole and sealed up by the wasp in the hole. And he's always thinking in hatred and fear of that wasp. And then later on, they open the hole and it becomes a wasp. So out of constant thinking of him, he became like that. So similarly with Shishupala, by thinking and thinking of Krishna, he got Sarupya Mukti. And he got a form of the spiritual world. Spiritual form. Because of thinking and thinking. In hatred, even. So there's an elaborate commentary by our different acharyas, like Jiva Goswami and Vishwanath, on this concept of hatred. Because it's not even bhakti. So definitely it's not encouraged to think in hatred, but that absorption in the Lord, that is what is praised. Not the hatred part, but the absorption. So, preferable to absorption because of hatred is absorption because of affection. That is bhakti. And when that becomes perfect, it becomes prema. So that is praiseworthy. That is what should be practiced by the devotee. He should do bhakti, become absorbed in the Lord, and attain prema, and he gets his form in the spiritual world, etc. So, the example of hatred of the Lord or whatever is used just to show the intensity of concentration, not that it's praised as a valid means of progressing towards the Lord. So the element of concentration on the Lord is there, which will have some good result. So, though this is unfavorable, the demons are offensive to the Lord, because he concentrated on Krishna, he got this result. But we should not think, therefore, any demon should get the same result. Because Hranyakasipu did not get this result. The same jiva. And Ravana did not get this result. He did not get to Vaikuntha by hating and battling Rama. But with Krishna it happened. Why? Because Krishna is Swayam Bhagavan. So of course he's more merciful, we can say that. But then the real reason is given. It's because Krishna is so attractive that the concentration on Krishna is much more than anything else. When Ravana saw Rama, he did not concentrate on him. He was not obsessed with Rama at any stage. He knew about Rama. He did not concentrate on him. And when Hranyakasipu saw Narsimhadev, he did not start concentrating on him at all. But from birth, Shishupala was concentrating on Krishna. Why? Because of Krishna's attractive qualities. More attractive than Narasimha, more attractive than Rama. So in this case, even though in his previous lifetimes he was full of hatred for the Supreme Lord in the form of Krishna, he kept on thinking of Krishna, 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 because Krishna's got all attractive qualities. And he uttered Krishna's name, which is also the same as Krishna. Huh? This had an effect, and it began to destroy his anarthas. In spite of the fact that his concentration was based on hatred, even that was enough because of the absorption and concentration on Krishna, he began to destroy his anarthas. So, this is the final stage of destroying his anarthas. This is the last time he utters his bad words. And after that, all of his anarthas were cleared out. And then Krishna touched him with the Sudarshan Chakra, and he got prema. So he's qualified for the spiritual world. Because it was Krishna, and he was able to concentrate on him so intensely, even though it was with hatred, he got this very different result. He ended up in the spiritual body, in the spiritual world with the spiritual body. Why? Because of Krishna. So that is explained, I think, in the Markandeya Purana, I think it is. This shows that Krishna is superior and shows manifest more qualities than Rama or Narasimhadev. Because same person, same jiva in three lifetimes got different results. When he was a Krishna, then he got the highest result. He went to the spiritual world. Otherwise, he just got another body. In Nectar of Devotion, it's described that Vishnu has five qualities extra, more than Shiva. One of those qualities, when he kills an enemy, that enemy gets some advancement. It doesn't say he goes to the spiritual world, but he gets some advancement. He may go to Swargaloka, may become a great king or whatever. The Lord does not degrade him and put him in lower body. He gets advancement. But when Krishna kills a demon, then he may get mukti or he may get Vaikuntha. So he gets something even superior to all the other forms of the Lord. Krishna, it happens because Krishna manifests more qualities, and particularly he has great beauty, so that the demons begin to concentrate on him, even in hatred. And therefore, they get higher result than when the Vishnu forms kill a demon.
Actually, we see that one Vaishnava is getting offended, the other Vaishnava should not tolerate. In this case, it's an assembly of Yudhishthira. How can they keep quiet when Vishnu...
They didn't.
Why Yudhishthira? He had every right to send him out of the court.
Yeah.
He just kept...
Well, you see later on they protest and whatever, and then Krishna throws the Sudarshan Chakra and that finishes the whole thing. But definitely they protested this. They didn't tolerate his offense. We as devotees, yes, we can see another meaning in it. But those devotees who were there, as explained in the Nectar Devotion among the Angas of Bhakti, one is that one does not tolerate the blasphemy of the Lord or the devotees. So definitely they did not. They all objected to this criticism of uttered by Sishupala.
Have we seen that Krishna? When Sishupala was criticizing Krishna, but Sponsor Vandavata became angry, when Bhishma also, Drona also, they became angry, but they could not do anything. Krishna himself taken charge to do something to Sishupala. That means Krishna is taking his own responsibility to kill Sishupala. But the devotee is not allowed to dedicate to the devotees. It's a little bit different.
Shishupala is a demon, and Krishna's ultimate mission is to annihilate all the demons, so it's part of that. And of course, in this case, the annihilation of this demon is also a blessing, because he gets Vaikuntha, and it ends his curse or whatever of the Jaya and Vijaya, whatever, getting stuck in the material world. So it fulfills many purposes. It points out the mercy of the Supreme Lord and this special position of Krishna in relation to others.
What is your explanation regarding this? The indirect meaning is Parokshavada, and Krishna is very happy with that. He likes this also. When it is mentioned in 11th
Kandasha,
so how to understand this? Sometimes we see that many different demigods, the demigods, all that is mentioned in Bhagavad Gita, that it also goes to Krishna. Ultimately, it goes to Krishna. So, can you say that Krishna is happy with the worship?
Well, we have direct worship and indirect worship. And for people who are not qualified for the worship of Vishnu, then they are advised to worship devatas to get their material desires fulfilled or whatever like that. But by doing that, at least they respect superior authority and they have to follow some principles and restrictions, etc. So this gradually purifies them and raises them up to sattva, at which point they can accept Vishnu as supreme. So indirect process. So better than that, of course, is the direct process. If one cannot worship the Supreme Lord, then follow karma yoga, etc., and restrict your senses to some degree, etc. Do that. And eventually, but you should not end there. You have to progress until you get to the worship of Vishnu and do bhakti. So indirect process. But of course, at the end of Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says, "Sarva dhamma parityaja mam ekam sharanam vraja." You give up this. It's not very practical in this age, so you just give up all these other processes and just surrender.
What's this point that Uddhava message to the gopis? Although he sent Krishna sent message to gopis that to become yogi or impersonalist, and Uddhava was almost delivered the same message, but Gopi understood it in a different way.
Yeah.
So can you say this depend on the qualification of the devotees that all the messages are same but understand the difference?
Yeah, according to qualifications. So the devotees see the real meaning, and those who are in karma yoga will see different meaning. Those in jnana and yoga will see different meaning for these statements. So in other words, we can say the Bhagavatam gives different meanings for different people. They can appreciate the Lord in a different way. They can appreciate the pastimes in a different way. Come up with a completely different meaning. Just as in the arena of Kamsa, different people saw Krishna in different ways. Some in Sakya Rasa, some in Madhurya Rasa, some in Vatsalya Rasa, some in Krodha Rasa, some in Jagupsa Rasa, some in Hasya Rasa. So Krishna is everything. So Bhagavatam is everything also. It displays different faces for different people, and they can get something out of it.
No, this is Vyasadeva, I think, had two disciples, Vaishampayan and Jaimini. Both of them are the speakers of Shrimad Bhagavatam. Vaishampayan and Jaimini and Vaishampayan.
Okay.
Both of the speakers of the Shrimad Bhagavatam. But we see there is an explanation regarding this in Vyasadeva Bhagavatam that Vaishampayan is a little bit philosophical, and Jaimini is a little bit devotional. But same things we see that explain in a different way. Like Sudha Goswami, he is also speaking of the Srimad Bhagavatam. But his Bhagavatam is different from the other Bhagavatam.
Mm-hmm.
Can you say that like if there is one same sort of like Devi Bhagavatam?
Well, that's completely different. That's not Bhagavatam, actually,
at all. But there's a Devi Bhagavatam. They accept it.
Well, some people accept it. We don't accept it.
When some like in creation and these things, almost like similar things.
Yeah, many things are the same, but then the worship is different, the conclusion is different in that text completely. So we don't put it on the same levels, the other Puranas even.
Well, in the day-to-day life, sometimes devotees get criticized, sometimes they call fool idiot. How likely would I think that the devotees think, oh, they call me fool? Yeah, I'm really fool, I'm blotting this material world and wasting my time. How nice we take it, it's the same example of Krishna to get in a positive way. But that's not happening.
Yeah, well, of course, the devotee always understands that in the material world one is subject to criticism or whatever like that. We see even for the person practicing jnana or yoga, in like in chapter 2 of Bhagavad Gita, he's supposed to be sthitapragya, equal poise in spite of all praises, equal poise in spite of all criticism. So it's a certain level of, we can say, advancement. At that stage, then we become indifferent to the criticisms or whatever. Then the other is, of course, that we take the criticisms as beneficial, and we take it as mercy of the Lord also, that everything is mercy of the Lord. So that is also a quality of the devotee, that he takes everything as some arrangement of his karma, but that is also mercy of the Supreme Lord to help his devotional advancement. And because he does that, then he gets the mercy of Krishna. So the devotee is tolerant in all cases, in all circumstances, not just criticism, but in any situation in the material world. He takes that as mercy of the Supreme Lord.
Okay.
was the last anatta was left. But Maharaj, usually we see there is a correlation between the anatta's present and the behavior of the individual.
Hmm.
Because Shishupal's anattas were reducing, but the behavior didn't change.
Yeah. So, that we may, for devotees, yes, but then we see also devotees, or even non-devotees like Ajamil, had all of his karmas destroyed, but it didn't look like he changed at all. So sometimes the appearance is a little deceptive. So all of his karmas were destroyed, but he looked like he didn't change at all. He was doing the same sinful activities up until his death, same attachments. So it looked like nothing was gone, even though all of his karmas were gone and Yamaraj couldn't touch him. So sometimes the appearance is deceptive and we don't see the actual what is happening. So we can say the same case in Shishupala's case. No one can see you. Look the same demon or whatever, but actually all the karmas are gone.
Maharaj, one more thing. In this regard, in 12th chapter of Krishna, towards the end of the chapter, is glorifying so many qualities of devotees. But if you go by this particular point, then those qualities may not manifest actually.
Yeah. The bad qualities may look like they're still there, and good qualities may not manifest externally in all cases. That is why we cannot criticize devotees. We have to be very careful about that.
But when is the point that those qualities, this eternal question Maharaj is on, should we develop those, focus on developing those qualities, or should we focus on devotion, and by doing that the qualities will appear?
Yeah. So if we focus on qualities, that's not considered to be a part of sadhana bhakti. We don't see it as that. It was one of the angas of sadhana bhakti, trying to develop good qualities. Because in the process of doing that, we may develop material good qualities. So the main process is to follow the angas of bhakti. And through that, then suvada takes place and all good qualities manifest. That means spiritual qualities manifest. The main concentration is upon the doing the process of bhakti in the proper way, and this will manifest all good qualities.
One last question. So then we also talk about Vaishnava etiquettes, and that's the ornament of the devotee. But if the qualities are not manifesting, then how do we expect the Vaishnava etiquettes? And there's a training on Vaishnava etiquettes, and devotees talk about Vaishnava etiquettes.
Yeah. Well, there are certain principles we try to follow, and we can never be perfect because we still have anarthas. Yet, we should be aware of the principles. Don't criticize Vaishnavas, for instance. We should be aware of that. In spite of that, people may do so. But at least if they have the knowledge, then they can, restrain themselves to some degree using their intelligence, their mind, etc. They can control themselves to some degree. And this will help them advance. So we have to use our intelligence and our knowledge to help us advance in devotional service. So therefore we get knowledge of what to do and what not to do in terms of how to behave. And this is helpful for us. It gives us some guidelines. It will not be perfect because we do have anarthas and things will happen. But nevertheless, at least we can try as much as we can. And this way we get less bad results. If we are in completely in ignorance, then it's likely we're going to get much more mistakes and much more aparads, etc. So it's not a perfect thing, but to the degree that we use our intelligence, we can control to some degree, and therefore we minimize the problems. So therefore, we have rules of etiquette, real conduct, etc.
It looks like Shishupala has been following Krishna's pastimes. He's able to meditate, using all his pastimes.
They criticize. The best thing, you can find something negative in it. So you take all the qualities of the Lord and all of his activities, and you can criticize them all for some reason or other if you want to. But then the opposite person is that a person can see all the bad things in a person. They can take some positive thing out of that. So of the two, of course, it's better to see the good things out of the negative rather than to see bad things out of the positive. It's much more productive to see good qualities rather than bad qualities.
Thank you.